The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, September 21st, 2007. This is episode number 96. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, as always, to bring you some news about MotoGP and motorcycle road racing. Today, we're going to be covering a Estoril wrap-up for the Grand Prix of Portugal. Had a long talk with Jules. We talked about Estoril. We talked about all kinds of good stuff. I thought it was pretty interesting. Hopefully, you will, too. And then after that, we're going to have a real quick Motegi preview. Before we get to that, I do have a couple of administrative notes and things that I want to take care of. First of all, a big giant thank you to Anders Karlstrom, Simon Levine, Travis Henson, and Corey Gaines. Double thank you to Corey Gaines. All of these guys were gave donations to the MotoGPOD podcast to help pay for the Skype bills, help pay for bandwidth, whatever. They went to the website. There's a button on there that says make a donation, and they very, very kindly did. I do appreciate it, guys, and I also appreciate all the emails that I get. Got a lot of feedback about last week's show with Toby Moody on there. It was great to have him on board. He was an excellent guest, and a lot of people enjoyed that, and I liked hearing from you guys with the comments and whatever else it all was that you sent in. Good stuff. So if you want to send an email, my email address is bob@motogpod.com. You can send that in, or you can go to the website at motogpod.com, the newly redesigned website, and there's a contact form there that you can use if you'd like to do it that way. All easy and good stuff. Speaking of email, I got an email from friend of MotoGPOD, Mark Callan. Kalen, and he, if you will remember, Mark was kind enough to donate us those Eddie Lawson posters that we gave away a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, we've known Mark for a while. He's a good guy. He's working out there back east as a freelance photographer and writer, or freelance writer and photographer in that order. And in any event, he sent me an email. Says, I don't know how many listeners you have that are in the Northeast or are Northeast expats, but could you pass the word along that I'm doing a book on the famed Marcus Dairy? It's being torn down. This is the Marcus Dairy in Danbury, Connecticut. He says the dairy came to motorcycle fame on a 1988 Kawasaki ad that depicted Super Sunday. The truth is the bikers hung out there for generations prior to that ad. And pass along their website, which is milkandmotorcycles.com. Excuse me, that's Mark's website about the book. It's called milkandmotorcycles.com. Apparently, the Marcus Dairy is being torn down and will be replaced by a mall, which is, of course, progress for you. But on the other hand, there's at least good news in that there will be a Marcus Dairy bar restaurant in that mall as an anchor tenant, and that the family that owned the Marcus Dairy will retain ownership of the property as a whole. So, you know, it's kind of cool that there's still going to be that motorcyclist hangout for all of you guys there back east. I encourage you to check it out, milkandmotorcycles.com. Thank you, Mark, for bringing that to our attention. And let's see, what else we got? We had a little tech note here. One of the emails that I got was from John Kelly in the UK. He told me he's having some troubles downloading or watching the videos on MotoGP.com, and it came out in the email that he's using a Macintosh. And I suggested, among other things, that he try Flip for Mac, which is a sort of it's a QuickTime component, to get technical about it, that allows you to use QuickTime to play the WMV format videos that MotoGP.com has. So if you're a Macintosh user out there, and I know a lot of you are looking at the download logs on the website, and you are having any kind of stuttery playback or just general difficulties playing the movies that are on the MotoGP.com website, check out Flip for Mac. It's F-L-I-P for the numeral 4 Mac.com. That's a little tech note. I use Flip for Mac. I think it's great, but it's not like they're a paid endorsement on the show or anything like that. Just a hint for all of you out there. And while we're talking about things technical, I made a slight change to some of the stuff that I'm doing with the show, the way I'm recording it. You might notice a little bit louder, a little bit hotter, trying to get those levels up a little bit so that you can hear it, like in the car with the windows down, that kind of thing, because I noticed that that's been a problem for a while, and I'm trying out a new piece of software. So let me know if you think it sounds good, bad, ugly, whatever. Send me an email, bob@motogpod.com. Like I said, there's all kinds of different ways to contact me, either email or through the contact form on the website at motogpod.com. All right, why don't we get along and listen to this call with Jules that we did. All right, we got Jules on the phone. Hey, how are you doing, Jules?
Doing good. How are you, Bob?
Doing great. Just coming down off that exciting weekend of racing. Like I was saying in the last show, it's probably one of the biggest weekends for racing, and unfortunately I was out of town, but with between MotoGP and AMA and Formula One and all the series that I follow, it was pretty really cool stuff. But of course, the high point of our weekend, MotoGP, so, oh man, it was just too much. I mean, it was a great race.
Yeah, it was a fantastic race. I think everybody enjoyed seeing some real, you know, dicing action finally. I don't want to say finally because, you know, even during the race they were saying, oh, it's really good to see. We've seen good racing, just not up front.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think it seems to me, I mean, everybody's been so quick to jump on this bandwagon, myself included, of the, you know, that the racing is in its close and it's a bit of a parade and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the season, we were all going, oh my God, this is the best season ever. We had a little lull of I don't know, four or five races where it was a bit less intense, you know, especially particularly the last three. And then now this weekend, though, back to Estoril. I think we found the solution to MotoGP's problem. They don't need a control tire. They don't need to go back to 990s. They just need to have every race at Estoril, apparently. So,
or a bad clutch.
Yes, exactly. There you go. But so we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Why don't we real quick, what we can do is, since neither Jewel nor I were lucky enough to be able to actually watch the qualifying and stuff, we didn't really catch a lot of the news and know what's going on. But looking down the practice sessions, Stoner led every practice session, 1, 2, 3. But then when it came to qualifying, who managed to get the pole? None other than Nicky Hayden, his first pole in a year since last year at Phillip Island, I think it was. And first pole of the season, so, you know, he was pretty stoked about that, and you could see the guy's been putting in the hours. After Misano, they did some testing, and he did 134 laps on the Monday after the race, which is, what, like 6 race distances, you know? So,
and the thing is, he took it right at the very end, so Stoner was on pole, and then Nicky stole it right at the end. It was pretty cool.
Right, the classic snatching defeat from the jaws of victory type of a thing, and Stoner couldn't come back. He ended up finishing 4/10 ahead of Stoner. And I noticed that his time, let's see, compared to the absolute fastest lap of all time, which was, he was only 1/10 off from Rossi's pole from last year. So, you know, those 880s or 800s can get around Estoril just about as quick as the 990s could.
Yeah, that's actually, it's interesting because we've had some fast tracks that where the 800s are actually better, and this track is actually one of the slowest track, like average speed wise. So you'd think that the 800s would actually be able to go faster, or considering that they can go faster on tracks like China, you know.
Yeah, that is interesting because, I mean, you know, I was thinking as soon as you started saying that, it's like, well, that. You know, you got that long front straight at Estoril, and maybe that sort of counteracts it and so forth. Yeah. But China's got a huge front straight, too. So,
two of them.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the 800s are it's a bit of a weird animal, and we're not always 100% sure exactly what to expect. There's been too many changes from one year to the next to really, truly compare the two bikes, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
So running down the rest of the grid real quick, we got, like I said, Hayden on pole, first pole position of the season. Casey Stoner, first race in, what, 4 that he didn't have the pole? So he was in second. Valentino Rossi, third spot on the grid, riding that pneumatically valved Yamaha. We're going to talk more about pneumatic valves in a future show. I briefly mentioned on them, but this is the way things are going. And it looks like Yamaha, we never did get any details about what happened to Misano, did we? Or did you hear anything?
I read somewhere that Rossi hit the kill switch.
No, really?
I'm just kidding. No. they get pissed off and hit the kill switch.
Don't do that to me. But basically, the last thing I heard was that, you know, Yamaha's been pretty tight-lipped about it, and they're basically saying it could have happened to any 4-stroke. So it's kind of like, well, it might have been a valve problem. It might have been a broken conrod. It might have been just all kinds of stuff, that most of which I don't understand, not being much of an engine guy. You know, broken conrod, what's that? going down, Makoto Tomata, fourth spot on the grid. Now, that's a little bit of a shocker if you don't know, you know, Tomata typically has done well at Estoril, but still, I have to admit, I was a little bit surprised to see him that high up on the grid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a nice swan song for the guy.
Yeah, I think
that's true. Actually how he does it at Motegi.
Yeah, that's true. He's got his home race coming up.
Yeah. He's always good there.
Yep. Danny Pedrosa, second row. Colin Edwards running out the second row in sixth spot on the grid. Not a bad qualifying effort from Colin. Unfortunately, as we'll talk about later, wasn't able to follow it up. Third row, Marco Melandri, Sylvain Guintoli on the other Dunlop Shod Tech 3 Yamaha. So, you know, both those guys in the top eight. Not too bad. Tony Elias in spot number nine. Then fourth row, John Hopkins, Carlos Checa, and Chris Vermeulen. So apparently the Suzukis don't like Estoril, or Hopkins and Vermeulen don't like Estoril all that much. I'm not 100% sure why they were, you know, after such a spectacular showing at Misano, why were they down there with a relatively poor qualifying showing?
No idea.
Yeah, no idea. So fifth row, Shinya Nakano, Alex Barros, and Loris Caparossi. Speaking of unfortunate qualifying positions, I think Caparossi is somewhat in cruise control, to be honest with you. He's just, you know, I don't like to think that of the guy, but it's just, you know, he's just finishing out the season. It's starting to look that way.
Yeah, he probably doesn't want to get hurt. But the other thing is, you know, maybe he's just really that much slower. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. True. I mean, it's not like this is all that. It's, well, actually 15th is pretty poor qualifying for him, but it's not like he's been neck and neck with Stoner all season long and then all of a sudden plunged down to 15th.
You know, yeah.
He's
a second off pole. He was a second and a little bit off pole, right? Second, oh my God, second and a half. Jeez.
Yeah, almost second and a half. He's way back there. And, sixth row, you got Ant West, Alex Hoffman, who we're going to talk about a little bit, and Randy DePunier. So the Kawasaki's also not liking Estoril very much. And last on the grid, spot number 19, Curtis Roberts on the Team KR. Now, Curtis he hurt his foot at Misano. Apparently, he was walking around in, like, sandals or something and cut his foot open really badly, like on a motorhome step or something like that. Did you hear anything about that at all?
No way.
Yeah. I heard that it was like, I've never seen so much blood in my life. Kind of a, you know, he just really gashed it open. So
yikes.
Yeah, that can't have helped. But there's our grid. So moving on to the race.
Well, I wanted to make a note that we see a lot of Michelins up front on this grid. If you notice, the first Bridgestone besides Casey is Melandri and Elias on the third row.
You're right.
So that might have something to do with it also. Like, maybe it's Bridgestone that doesn't like Estoril as much.
Yeah, actually, that's probably a fair assumption. And also, just taking it at face value, if you just see, okay, out of that top eight, you've got two Dunlop bikes, two Bridgestones, and four Michelin shod motorcycles. But also, you've got, let's see, a nice wide assortment of brands. You've got Honda, Yamaha, and Ducati, you know. So, I mean, things are shaking up on that side of things of... It just was, you know, it was an evenly balanced sort of grid,
yeah.
You know, when you take it on face value. And that's cool. That's good stuff to see. We want everybody to be happy that they're spending their money in MotoGP and they're going to keep coming back. But
and three champions on the front row.
Exactly. Yes. Yes, that's true.
Okay.
One only a future champion, but of MotoGP. So on the start, you know, we were looking for Hayden wanted the whole shot real bad. He had said that, you know, that he's going to get it. He had a little sign on the grid walk about, you know, no excuses and this and that and the other. And Hayden's not one to make excuses. But unfortunately, his start wasn't that great. Or maybe it was just that Stoner's was super great because Stoner pretty much just plowed right past him the way it looked to me on the start.
I don't think Stoner has had a bad start all year. I can't remember.
The guy just never, he's not making a misstep anywhere. And that's what you're sort of waiting for. Everybody calls Danny Pedrosa the robot. It's almost like Casey Stoner is, you know, man in the machine, the ultimate racer. Remember Heidi's article a long time ago?
Of course. Yeah.
And so Stoner gets the whole shot, and Pedrosa was just right up there, also rocketing up from the second row. So going into the first corner there, though, it basically you've got Stoner followed by Pedrosa, but Hayden's not going to be putting up with that. And he tried to go around the outside in this move that I thought was just, wow, almost too risky. When you, I mean, I saw that, I was on the edge of my seat.
I think that was great. It was great to see Hayden just riding balls out. He rode balls out the entire race. And so right from the very beginning, he knows that this track is, you can't kind of get away with stuff like that. Because there's places where you can catch up if you do make a mistake.
Yes, that's true.
As our front leaders like showed over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean the tight, twisty nature of it. You know, it's a bit of a go kart track type of a thing at Estoril, but it's one. You know, I like it. I only 41,000 was the crowd on the day, which I thought was a little small. I haven't noticed any. I don't have handy previous year's attendance figures, but that didn't seem all that impressive to me. So I'm not 100% sure why that is, if it's a, you know, that Estoril just doesn't have that much capacity, or if it was a bit less well attended this year. But in any event, Hayden was not able to capitalize on that first corner thing. He had to back off right there at the first corner. So we had Stoner, Pedrosa, Hayden, Rossi, Melandri kind of thing going on for a while. But it just, you couldn't say at any one point that, you know, that it was becoming a procession. It looked a little bit like Stoner was going to start breaking away, but Pedrosa was just like on him like a cheap suit. And then farther back, Melandri and Rossi were doing their own thing. And I mean, it was just exciting stuff. So I don't know if there's any, I mentioned to you when we were talking a little bit yesterday about that there was one particular pass that I saw that, where you had an overhead shot on the straightaway, and it was Hayden passing Melandri, then they were battling it out a little bit around lap five or four. Yeah, and you just saw it overhead, and it was like, wow. So
my favorite pass was on the third lap when Rossi passed Hayden in that left-hander just past the right-hander, this is turn two. He passed Hayden, and like, I've never seen a rider getting passed fight that hard inside of a corner, you know, probably touching, almost touching. Hayden just was really impressive in this race. We didn't see this that kind of determination last year, unfortunately. When he got passed by Rossi, he just got passed and left behind. Or he was running way ahead, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And that was a super good pass. It was, they had to be parts touching, you know, rubbing elbows, rubbing fairings, something. I mean, they were just going around that corner in absolute lockstep, and it was pretty impressive stuff, and Hayden just did not want to let go. And
he did it to Melandri, you know, two laps later.
Right, exactly. And there was a lot of pass and repass, you know, outbreak, but then you run wide so the other guy shoots back in. I mean, that happened more times than you can sort of just shake a stick at in the race between all these various different groups of guys battling for position. It was just a really super exciting race all around. That chicane at Estoril, the left right, I'm not sure the corner number it is, but you know the one I'm talking about,
yeah,
where they're going uphill.
Uphill.
Yeah, yeah, of course you do. Yeah,
very slow.
It's like a driveway. I mean, you look at that the camera angle they had this year. I'm sure the cameras are in roughly the same position. They almost always are, but somehow for this year, I noticed it more. Of the, you know, the, how sharp that turn is, and you're immediately plowing up a steep hill. And I was reminded of that when I turn onto my street where I live, and I typically trundle around this thing, and you know, on the motorcycle, the front suspension compresses because I'm hitting a hill, and of course there's a grating right there too. But these guys are taking it. I don't know, you know, exactly what the speed would be there, but it's a first gear corner, but they're probably still doing 45, 50 miles an hour at least. I mean, ballpark guess.
I think 60.
Yeah. It's just, amazing.
And I think that corner, that set of corners really kind of separates the men from the boys, so to speak. You know, you have to, enter it correctly and kind of commit way ahead of basically there's four corners in progression that you're committing to with your first entry.
Right, right. And if you don't get your setup right, you know, off the get-go, then you're messed up for corners farther on down. And yeah, yep. That's one of the keys to making a fast lap around this track. And definitely it seems like the top-notch guys on this race all seem to have that wired. Stoner apparently, we were seeing somebody else up front for a change. Oh my God, the first race in four that Stoner wasn't leading the lap when Pedrosa finally passed him, you know, for the lead. Mm-hmm. And apparently, though, he had clutch problems. So it's not like, and I don't want to say, well, I don't know what I think, but it's a little bit like that. Okay, it had Stoner not had clutch problems, you know, and if pigs could fly, then we know what would have happened on this race. But Stoner kept hitting a false neutral, and it took him quite a time to sort of adapt to that. And but I think towards the end of the race, he had managed to get his rhythm around that, which is in itself a super impressive feat. I mean, if you're, you know, can't figure that you're going to be in neutral or second every time you shift gears, that's kind of, you know, got to be good times for racing there.
I'm thinking that there's probably something wrong with a GP bike at every race.
Yeah, that's
you just don't
true,
normally
too.
Talk about it, you know. Yeah. It may not be as bad, but like, I mean, these bikes get put together every morning. They get taken apart after warm up, then they get put together back in the race. Something might not be quite right, and you know, the rider adjusts to it. And sometimes they don't talk about it. Sometimes they do talk about it. I'm sure they talk to their crew about it. It'd be interesting, actually. Maybe a question for Liam would be one like, how often do they actually come back and say, "Hey, I wish that this was, you know, something was loose, or this wasn't working quite right." I'm sure it's like a lot more than we hear on the interviews after the race.
You know, that's actually a super good point. And especially also with the teams constantly trying out new parts of one kind or another. Yeah, these bikes at the end of the year, they're quite different than they are at the beginning of the year. Just a wide variety of different bits that they're going to try out. And it just depends on what they're doing as far as the race is concerned. I mean, you know, obviously look at Rossi's whole new engine.
Yep.
And
yep.
So.
And yeah, and you know, later on, Barros's bike had a slightly bigger problem than a slipping than a bad clutch. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a bummer. Yes, there was
just lucky.
Smoke came out. We saw a shot of Barros's bike smoking too, right?
Or his engine blew up.
Yeah, done blowed up. And yeah, we had quite a couple retirements out of the race. Curtis Roberts retired real early on, like lap two, just pulled into the pits. I never got any news of exactly what happened. If that had something to do with that foot injury, if the bike just broke, you know, who knows what. So I don't know about that one. Alex Hoffman retired on lap 11, which we didn't even see on camera, and that led us to some exciting news, and I really wanted to talk to Liam about it, but unfortunately with his schedule going to Japan and all of that, we weren't able to do a call. I'm sure you've heard this one, Jules, that he got the boot that day.
Oh, yeah.
Of course,
So
Alex Hoffman was let go by the team. He was released from his contract because apparently he came in to the pits and parked a perfectly operational motorcycle and basically said, "I don't have the motivation to battle for so far down on the grid." And what he was in position when he took, well, he was last. And no, excuse me, he wasn't last. What am I talking about here? He was almost last. And then he was last after Roberts retired. Yeah, and so he just retired.
He had to start out of the pit lane because they had to switch bikes for him at the last moment.
Right, exactly. And that certainly didn't help his race. And I don't have the full lap chart, so I don't know how far back he was. I didn't print that one out. And you didn't see any of it on camera because there was just so much going on up front. You know, they're not going to show you the guy trundling around in last position. But yeah, so he basically retired and parked the bike. And we're
on retired. He retired.
Yes, and that's a shame, you know, because the Hoff, you know. But I can see maybe he was affected by that the crash at Laguna Seca. You know, both hands all messed up and everything else. I'm sure that partially entered into his thinking a little bit of like, why am I risking, you know, more injury or God knows what for this.
And maybe, you know, he knows that he's not going to get a contract next year from Dantine, and he's going to have to shop around if he's tired, you know.
Yeah, that's not a real good way to shop game. Yourself, though. But, yeah. Yeah. So word on the street is Chaz Davis is going to be racing at Motegi, right?
I think it's no longer ago. I think he pulled out.
No,
it's Ito. Ito is going to be racing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So Shinichi Ito, is he still a tester for Ducati, or was he doing something else? Or I haven't heard anything from him for a while.
I don't think he's a tester. I think that, what's his name? I don't remember his name actually anymore. But but no, I don't think Ito was testing this year.
Okay.
And, but he is definitely riding for Dantin. So it's going to be Ito and Barros.
Okay, I missed that news. That's unfortunate. I was kind of looking forward to Chaz doing it. Not that Ito's a bad guy or anything either, but just, you know, sort of that, you know, fairy tale sort of a thing where Chaz Davis gets his ride at Laguna and then manages to turn it into something. So for whatever reason, we'll find out more details on that later, and I'll hopefully mention it in the show. Let's see. As far as the whole race was concerned, we had Rossi manage to get up to the front on lap. He finished lap 10 in first position past Pedrosa. Did that for, what, seven laps?
Well, hang on a second. So what I wanted to say is that since we're talking about the race again. It was really a Pedrosa-Stoner thing. And while Rossi was in third place, he was way behind. I think he was over like a second and a half behind by the time things started shaking up around lap four. So very, very early on, it looked like a runaway between Stoner and Pedrosa, with Pedrosa. It even looked like Stoner was going to get away, but like you said, you know, but possibly this problem with his clutch and this false neutral. Whatever the reasons, Pedrosa was really, really good this weekend, and he managed to pass Stoner, and then it was only like on lap six that Rossi started to catch in the group, and then he passed Stoner pretty easily, caught up with Danny, and then we had a really amazing battle for the next, 17 laps.
Right, the rest of the race. I mean, yeah, it really was until the last lap. And it was a real ding dong battle, as they say. It really was. And yeah, you're right. I should have not glossed over that, because yeah, it was at first it was the Pedrosa and Stoner show going on. Once Rossi got past Nicky Hayden, Hayden sort of started dropping back and ended up having a few problems of his own with Melandri, but always managed to just stay ahead of Melandri. There's only one lap where Melandri actually finished the lap officially ahead of Hayden, but they were basically swapping positions there for quite a while, kind of thing. But then once Stoner, and maybe this was when Stoner's clutch started acting up, or the tires, you know, the combination of things, and Pedrosa, or Rossi got up front and passed Pedrosa. For one, I'm sure the crowd went just absolutely crazy, and
you could hear it on the feed.
Yeah, and it was cool stuff to see that, and like I said, that battle from lap 10 through 16, you know, you have Rossi leading the official lap charts, but then Pedrosa manages to get past him again, and he led a whole bunch of laps. So you just did not know right up to the last minute. And then Rossi was back to classic Rossi mode, I think, of stalk, and pounce kind of a thing. But it didn't work out quite as easily for him as it has in other races and other times.
There was something very interesting that happened around lap 20, which was Pedrosa has historically been like outbraked by Rossi, and it was the same thing. Like every lap at the end of the straight, Rossi would catch up to Pedrosa on the brakes. And I think Rossi was starting to count on that. That he was thinking, okay, next time I'm going to get much closer to him, and I'm going to do the same thing, and that's where I'll pass, right? Like he was setting it up, and I think. And I think on the lap where he figured out he was going to do that, Pedrosa braked really late and very hard, and surprised Rossi, I'm guessing, because when you're looking at the helicopter view, from that point on, Rossi could not outbreak Pedrosa. And I was talking to my my friend of mine, Dario, from he's a Rossi non valet Rossi at right on two, and he was thinking that because my analysis was that Danny kind of pulled a fast one on Rossi, that he was letting him think that he was going to be doing early braking, and then adjusted his line and whatever and kept Rossi at bay at that one point where Rossi really felt confident. But his thing was that Rossi was trying all sorts of things at the end of the straight and just said, you know what, this is not going to be the place where I pass. So it was not that Danny was braking so much later, it was that Rossi started braking a little earlier because he didn't want to take any more chances, because there was that one moment where he went really deep and had to really get up and, you know, lost like a half a second to Danny and had to make it up again.
Right, right. And that's true. That was, now that you mentioned that and everything I do. And talking about double takes, that reminds me of something, and not to sort of switch back, but I'm switching back. There was one point earlier on in the race, it was around lap six or so, and I'm not sure which corner it was, but Stoner ran just a tad wide. And the onboard camera gives you a distorted view of things. So it looked like Stoner was going extremely wide. And it was when Pedrosa passed Stoner. So you saw Pedrosa coming through, and they showed you the second onboard where you can see Stoner's face. And did you see the double take he did?
No.
It looked like it to me, the classic sort of, you know, whoa, all of a sudden, you know, where'd that guy come from? and I kind of thought it was funny and rewound it, but
that's funny. He's probably looking for to see if anybody else was coming by. I'm sure he knew that Danny was there.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, and it might not have been so much a double take. It's just that he sort of, you know, he's looking through his corner and then, oh, wow, you know, he turns his head farther around. But yeah, you're right. He might well have been seeing is like, oh, is anybody else going to be coming through?
Yeah.
It's just overall, it was just super good stuff. And towards the last couple of laps when Rossi did pass Pedrosa, it got really intense.
It really did. These bikes were like bumping all over the place. They were jumping around. Both those guys really, really, they did not give up until the finish line.
No, not at all. And it was the gap at the finish was not quite 2/10. So, you know, not by far not the closest race we've ever seen, but definitely also not any kind of great big runaway with the winner, you know, leading by 5 seconds or something like that.
And Stoner was catching them.
Yes,
actually, I'm not sure if he was catching them on the last two laps, but he was catching them from lap 23 to 26. He was getting closer and closer. So he probably, like you said, he probably got adjusted to that false neutral, got his pace up again.
Right, exactly. Started making up some time and all of that, and I think he's actually said that same thing. So, crossing the finish line, you had Valentino Rossi won the race. It's a fantastic thing for him. Ended his longest spell of no race wins since, 2000? You know, the longest would have been in the top MotoGP class of no wins.
Yep.
So then that's good news for him. And should purse money might be able to help pay that tax bill. So it's kind of cool. And Danny Pedrosa in second, fantastic effort from him. Casey Stoner in third, again, like we said, riding through the bike problems. Another race where the guy really didn't make, it's not like he made a big mistake or anything like that, that you know, it just didn't happen for him at Estoril. And that fact that it didn't happen for him led us to have a sort of a more exciting race, I think. And then Hayden was in fourth. And did you see the stuff at all at the end on the feed where they had Hayden? They showed Hayden going into his garage.
No, I didn't see that. Okay, finished like 12 seconds behind Stoner, which was surprising considering he was pretty close most of the race.
Right, he really fell behind. Back. Yeah, in the last. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what lap that started on, but he did start falling way, way back. And I mean, I noticed we were watching the race, and you're seeing the first three riders come through the corners and stuff, and there's Nicky, you know, 10 seconds later. And I was like, where the hell is he? Yeah. And the cameras were not on him at that point because there was the big battle going up front. So unless you had the timing screen and all that, which I didn't because I didn't watch the race live, you know, you kind of didn't know exactly where he was at going on. But I did notice a huge, huge gap. I believe that was that his tires, you know, he had perhaps taken a little bit too much of the tires out in the earlier part of the race or whatever. He just didn't have the pace and he knew it. So he figured he was going to settle for fourth kind of a thing and made sure that he finished ahead of Melandri. But when he was going into the box at the end of the race, they had the cameras on him. He goes back in there, just kind of, you know, he's walking very purposefully back to the end of the garage and he goes to sit down. And then it's like he notices this damn cameraman is still following him around. And apparently also, I think Mamola might have been there because he just sort of, you saw him glance up, he sits down, he stands back up and goes back into the back of the garage where the cameras aren't allowed. It's like, oh, no, I don't want to talk to anybody right now. So,
no, yeah. I missed that totally.
Fifth spot, Marco Melandri. You know, the guy never ceases to surprise. He's always doing a pretty good job. Did he have a giant crash again this weekend? I don't think he did that I know of, but seems to have managed to shake that curse a little bit of having to ride through something broken or whatever. But I'm sure he's got plenty of leftovers from the previous broken bones and whatnot that he's still riding through some pain. Sixth spot, John Hopkins.
Who basically had a great start and then just kept that position for the entire race.
Right. And we just did not hear much from Suzuki or you know, in general of any sort of, you know, what happened. Of why they're, you know, what happened basically. seventh spot, Carlos Checa on the Honda LCR. You know, not a bad finish when you're on the LCR team up there in seventh. Tony Elias was in eighth.
And I just wanted to say, like we didn't see that much of Elias, and of course this is where he had that brilliant victory last year. And but at the end, it did show us the battle between him and Caparossi and Tamada, and he's still up to that crazy old antics, like those at the end of the straight. His wheel is pointing, I mean, visibly pointing to the left, and he's turning right, you know, totally drifting the rear end. It was just, I wish we could have like a camera that just follows Tony Elias that we can watch later on after the race. You know?
Yeah, that would be cool.
he's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, talking about that sliding the rear one, that shot of Pedrosa where he was going around, very un-Pedrosa like lines on a couple of corners, mm-hmm. with the rear wheel sliding all over the place, and really kind of doing the point and shoot almost, which I don't know if it was intentional or
you say like on the last two laps.
Yeah, I believe it was. There was an excellent shot where you just saw, you know, Pedrosa's bike, and they actually, I think they did a replay on it, and it was towards the last part of the race. Yeah. So I mean, part of it is tires. Part of it might have been just pushing as hard as you can. In a combination of what it was. But yeah, good stuff. Ninth spot went to Loris Caparossi. I don't know. He came. He raced. He finished. So, you know, can't say much else than that. Colin Edwards, disappointing race, finished in 10th, and he just did not have the best of times. I know he was dropping way back at one point, and there was a question of, you know, what's wrong with the bike? He's having some kind of troubles, so it might have been almost to a point that he was lucky to have finished at all.
He didn't manage to pass a bunch of guys. Let's see, this lap chart. He was 17th up until lap 18. And then he passed West, and then he passed Guintoli, and then he passed Vermeulen. So right. He did figure out whatever was wrong, or maybe no. I mean, yeah, he. I think he even passed Shinya Nakano at the end, at the last lap.
Yeah, his problems cleared up because he dropped down to dead last there for a while, and So that was, you know, at least he again snatched victory from the jaws of defeat in a relative sense, you know, to be able to finish in the top 10. And Shinya Nakano in 11th spot, you know, racing a pretty good race. Again, nothing spectacular. He was told before this weekend that, you know, get on the ball or you're definitely not coming back next year, sort of a thing. Or was that before Misano? But recently, at some point in the relatively recent past, Shinya Nakano was told that he has to start showing some results.
Well, it looks like Shinya is going to Gresini.
Oh, yeah. I missed that news. I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which is, I think, a very cool. I mean, he's now been on the Honda. He's been on the Bridgestones with Kawasaki forever. Now he's been on the Honda on Michelin's. That didn't work out too well. But maybe Michelin, maybe Bridgestone and Honda will be the right combo for him.
Possibly.
And, you know, Gresini has always been a good team to be on, so.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, that's good news. I mean, this is great how I'm so well prepared for this show here. It's like, oh, wow, really? You know, but sorry about that. it's good news to hear that he's going to be.
It's not signed yet, but that's the, you know, that's the
rumor, the latest rumor. Yeah.
Yeah. Silly season continues.
Yes, it still does. It won't quite go away completely, but within a race or two, I think everything will be done. Although you never know until there's always something that could shake up. Ant West finished in 12th spot.
He did manage to pass Vermeulen.
Yes, he did.
So I think Vermeulen was just not happy at this track. Either the bike was not working right or. He just, you know, I mean, this is not that unusual for Vermeulen to finish this far back. I think it was, he's kind of like a Melandri. He's like, does really well or just doesn't.
A little bit of a random number generator type of a guy. Yeah, where it's just, yeah, I mean, not quite as all over the map as Melandri tends to be, but yeah, he does have some, he's not nearly as consistent as those guys up front. And, that's consistency is what makes champions, classic example, of course, being Nicky Hayden last year. A lot of these, Curtis Roberts in 2001, you know, just go out there, ride good every day. So what does that mean for Vermeulen's long-term future? Well, it remains to be seen. You know, I'm not saying he's a bad rider or anything. He's just not as consistently good as the other guys. So, and then Selvin Guentoli finished 14th in the last finisher. So we left points on the table, only 14 racers finishing. Because the retirements, which we kind of drifted off a little bit and didn't finish talking about the retirements, but they had Curtis Roberts was first, Alex Hoffman quit on second, and then Randy DePugnie, what was DePugnie's problem? His bike just done broke, I think, and
it actually blew up pretty bad.
Right, exactly. Lots of smoke, and he pulled off the line, pulled off the track into the gravel trap, and you could see the frustration, lots of...
Yeah, the frustration was like, ah, damn it, I wanted to crash this thing.
Yes, gesticulating. Yeah, I wanted to crash. Also, and apropos of nothing, the second race in a row where we got to see DePugnie walking around with his leathers off, so you see his, you know, bare torso, and it's a little bit like, you know, hey, I don't need to see that. I do know there's at least a couple listeners, though, that spot that and like it. Listeners of the female persuasion that I have exchanged an email with or two. And it's like, oh, hey, look at that. So a little thrill for them to see because the guy's quite ripped. So I guess if I had a chest like that, I'd probably parade around in front of the cameras, too.
It's funny.
Alex Barros, another... broken motorcycle, which what were the details on that? And we talked about it earlier on in the call, and it's
tried to get Liam to tell me. He said something in the engine broke. I was like, all right, thanks, dude.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what you get, you know. So we know it's somewhat isolated. The bike done broke. There wasn't quite as impressive a giant cloud of smoke as there was out of DePugnie's Kawasaki, but yeah.
It was kind of like a puff and...
Yeah, a puff and done. Yeah, it was a bit like that. And then Tamada off there, and he managed to crash out. So the Dunlops apparently didn't last the distance, which also because Guentoli, speaking of Dunlop's not lasting the distance, Guentoli pitted and got a new rear.
That's right. So, that's right. I love the fact that he did that. That's cool. I mean, he did it on lap 19. So he's still, there was still not a lot of retirements, which means that he was still unsure whether he was going to get any points.
Exactly.
I mean, like, it makes sense when there's only 14 riders left. Hey, I'm going to get a point for free. All I have to do is just go in, change my tire,
and circulate,
do a bunch of laps, you know.
Yeah.
But he's I like that. I like him a lot. I'm really looking forward to seeing him on Dantin.
I agree. He's got some, you know, as a racer and all of that at this level, he's got growth and maturing ahead of him to do, as we've saw by him, you know, crashing at Laguna Seca. But everybody makes mistakes. I mean, look at the top-notch guys. You know, everybody except Stoner will make mistakes. And it was. I thought that's another heroic effort. And the thing is, why he was going back out there when it looked, you know, yeah, sure, only one more guy has to retire and I'll get a point or whatever. But that's probably not the motivation for going out so much as get some data for Dunlop, for Tech 3, for Sylvan.
It's my job. Doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, a little free track time on a $1 million motorcycle. How can you go wrong?
Yep.
But, I agree. That's cool stuff to see that he did that. And, you know, Dunlop says they're coming back next year, although I don't know
what
who
team
they're going to be with. Yeah. Team KR is one obvious possibility.
Right.
But other than that, I think most of the tire stuff has pretty well shaken out, hasn't it? Because Tech 3, we know Tech 3 is going to be on
Michelin's.
And
so is Fiat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, I found it very interesting that David Brivio made it very clear that A, Rossi and Lorenzo will share the garage and that they will ride on Michelin's. Like, almost like he was just getting annoyed with the rumor mill and, you know, this story spinning out of control about Rossi not liking Lorenzo and demanding his own team and all that kind of stuff. And I think that a lot of that was just fueled by probably Italian media. And he just put all that stuff to rest. He just wanted, you know, just categorically, this is the way we run the team. You know, like, Valentino Rossi does not run this team.
Right.
He's a very important member of this team, but he does not run this team. You know, and this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I think Brivio's like that. You know, I don't think it's not like he rules the team with an absolute iron fist, but he's like a strong manager and quiet. You know, you read the little press releases and stuff, but that you don't. Other than that, you don't get a whole big sense of a lot of screaming or anything like that. He just, you know, gets the job done and runs the team that way. That's what it strikes me as, at least.
Yeah. Yep.
Being as we are, so hooked up on the inside of MotoGP. But, and that brings us to talk about the whole Lorenzo and Rossi thing, which, because it's been in the press lately, and I think it's going to be a super interesting, dynamic, a super interesting sort of team dynamic next year to see these guys, because Rossi is the consummate showman. And, you know, he always has his thing. Lorenzo almost seems like he does it because he has to me.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean? That's the way I get. He doesn't look he's out there having fun
I agree. Yeah. He's like, it's like a persona he developed rather than.
Right. It's like, I'm going to be as cool as Rossi by having these post-race celebrations. But it's kind of like,
forced.
It looks forced almost to me. Lorenzo's a hell of a rider, and he's got his own way of doing things both on and off the track. He's not exactly, I think he eats alone a lot, because I don't think he's friends with anybody in the 250 class. And it's going to be real interesting. And even Rossi, his normal sort of, when you see the guy, when they're doing interviews and things like that, Rossi's body language and all that sort of thing often tells wonders, and he's not a happy guy with Lorenzo around. Now, whether that's just another Rossi sort of already getting the mind games going for next year, who knows? That might be true, but I don't know. I think the guy, Rossi, does not like the guy. And that's, you know, and that's a bummer for Rossi in that he's had a teammate that has been like the perfect teammate for so long. I mean, because Edwards and Rossi really get along.
Yeah.
And
I wonder how they would get along, though, if Colin
was challenging
him. Had better results.
I agree. And that might be part of what Rossi's worries, fears, concerns are, is that, you know, I've got this kid coming up that's hungry, young.
He's going to be sharing my setup data.
Right, right. Oh, we could get into, Formula One has a lot better gossip news than MotoGP gets. I mean, you just get more of it. Perhaps if we were in Spain or Italy, we'd have more of this stuff going on. But the English language, what we get, you get so much more with Formula One. And they have that whole thing going on in McLaren with Alonso and all of that, which, if you're not familiar with it, listeners, basically is the team's falling apart. But they, because they, same sort of thing, you know, current world champion, this new young kid comes into the team, starts beating current world champion, it's like, damn it, takes his toys and goes home type of an attitude. They won't share data and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, is that going to happen next year? I don't know. We'll have to see. And maybe this is where Brivio's talents and abilities as a manager of that team, you know, how this is going to shake out. You know, can he, does he have the force of will to sort of bend Rossi to do what he wants? You know, Rossi's superstar world champion motorcyclist who, you know, even though he's not the whole team, he is most definitely a very, very important part of that team.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. And you know, speaking of the whole mind games thing, I kind of want to go back to some points in the race. I think that there was a few times in the last few years where Rossi really was like pushing specifically like Gibernau and Biaggi from behind, knowing that he could pass them, but trying to force them into a mistake. But I think they were very rare. And like Dario and I, again, we were talking about this stuff, and he had a very interesting thing to say. He was like, you know, we attribute a lot of the stuff as spectators. We're looking and we're seeing Rossi like edge up to Danny, and the announcers go, oh, he's just showing him the wheel. He's showing him the wheel. He wants him to know he's there. But you know what it really is just he was not able to complete the pass.
Yeah.
It's very simple. It's, I mean, these guys are riding so on the edge. They're so focused. They, you look at those passes where like that pass that I mentioned, Rossi had on Hayden, you know, he made that pass stick. If he hadn't, Nick Harris may have been saying, oh, he's just taunting Nicky. He's showing him the wheel. So I have to say that after Dario went on and on about this, and I started seeing his point of view. It's like, you know, I've been at the track, and I know how hard it is to just be consistent, stay, you know, and think about where you're going to try to make that pass and whatever, and then these so-called mind games are probably just a side effect of what needs to be done as a racer. Like, the racer needs to do, you know.
Right. I agree. I think that's an excellent point. That what, even though it looks to us like it's a mind game, that it's not. But I do think though that things are more difficult for Rossi this year, you know, that he's definitely having to put more work into it, which means he has less energy. You remember how many dollars did you have on the Keith code? Is it $10 or $100 or whatever it is?
Yeah, $10.
Yeah, $10. So if you spend $8 of your dollars just trying to win the race, you know, then you have $2 for showing your other guy the front wheel, kind of a business or whatever.
Right.
So Rossi's,
he's been spending $11, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Which is why he's in debt now. The aliens.
And not paying tax on his Keith code dollars. oh, ouch. So he, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And as an excellent sort of a theory going on that one, that what we think of as a mind game is definitely not always a mind game. Sometimes it's just flat out, he couldn't make the pass stick.
Yep. Yeah. And I think he does like to be behind for a little while to kind of study the other rider.
Sure.
But Stoner, remember earlier in the season, was saying, you know, there's a lot of this talk about riders liking to dice, but the reality is we all like to be out front and winning by a large gap, just that most of the time we can't.
Right. Stoner particularly obviously does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so just did the win race, the race won and done. And Stoner also hates anybody following him. Every practice session, he makes sure he's got clear track.
Yep. Yeah. I have this photo that I took of him at Laguna Seca during qualifying, where I think it was Melandri and Duhamel who like hooked up to Stoner and like, so I saw them hooking up on one lap, and on the next lap, Stoner was just circulating really slow, looking back.
Yeah, it's so like, get past just
waiting,
me.
Waiting for everybody to get past him and so he could get on it again.
It's like me at a track day. I don't want anybody behind me either. So I don't want to feel like I'm slowing him down. So the championship is, it is barring disaster, you know, and we don't want disaster. I don't want to see Stoner crash out or anything like that. But it's going to be a lock, it looks like, in Motegi, which should be a real, real good race that we've got coming up this weekend. So got getting into that last part of the season here. Got Motegi and then another gap till Phillip Island in the middle of October. So they get to fly all the way to Asia and then fly all the way back and then fly all the way back and all that.
Yeah, let's not forget that there's that Pedrosa is not out of reach of getting second from Rossi. If Rossi gets another retirement,
yeah,
you know, we could, Pedrosa's capable of winning any of the remaining races too. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we've got some, exactly. The guy's, he's riding strong. We've got some tracks that he's done well at, there's a lot in that mix going on, and there probably will be a battle for second in the championship. So
yeah,
but super good stuff.
Imagine, and like I said, Rossi was third in a championship. Can you imagine that?
I know. That, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, sooner or later it has to happen. We all, Schumacher didn't finish, you know, wasn't champion his last 2 years and all this. Sooner or later that you get whatever it is, too old, too bored, too something, whatever. And,
I don't think that Rossi's too bored.
I don't think so either. And I think this has totally focused his whole thing there. We haven't heard, you know, he's a motorcycle racer. There's none of this talk about going to rally or going to Formula One, which, speaking of rally, and Rossi dedicated the win to Colin McRae, which, sad news, Colin McRae, former world rally championship champion, died in a helicopter crash last weekend.
Yeah.
Young guy, too. He's only 39. And his little kid, two little kids in there, like 5 and 6 years old in this helicopter.
And, the kids died, too?
Yeah, they all died.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
oh,
four
man.
People in there. Yeah, really sucks.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Actually, there was news about Rossi and the rally team. He's going to be in the GB race with the Subaru. They just announced it.
Yeah. Which, when does that take place?
I think November, early November or something like that.
But yeah, I seem to remember hearing something about that, but there's no, you know, it's a one-off and he's,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's definitely a one-off. There's none of these rumors of that he's going to be, doing it next year or something
right,
like
right,
that.
Right, right, right,
yeah.
Right.
And it's
not,
a win-win
not going
for
Ferrari
for
either.
Right, exactly. And that's it's a win-win for Rossi. I mean, Rossi likes this stuff, which you can't blame him. I mean, you know, that looks like great fun. And on the other hand, WRC is a series that could definitely use a boost as far as getting back on track. So even though, unfortunately, here in the United States, it's basically impossible to follow on television. You know, your only way is the internet. So, well, whatever. We're digressing.
Right.
Great call, Jules. I think we should probably end it. Thank you very much for getting up so early in your morning. And I had fun. It was nice talking to you.
It's good chat. Talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Motegi coming up, the Grand Prix of Japan, 1 week after the Portuguese Grand Prix at Estoril. We're going all the way around the world to Japan. So MotoGP's there already. In fact, free practice on the Friday sessions has already happened as I record this, so I can tell you a little bit about what happened to that. And it wreak havoc with the times that the race is going to be on. I'm going to mention that a little bit. Motegi is a pretty cool track. It was designed in 1997 as a test venue. It's got ultra-modern facilities and a really nice, smooth surface, a lot of good grip. It's got a lot of second-gear turns kind of linked together with these
long straights that are almost like mini drag strips, as they describe it in my handy dandy Yamaha press release, which I'm using as a crib sheet here for the description of Motegi. So it's kind of a good track. There's good race in there. I'm looking forward to this weekend. I think it's going to be really, really super interesting stuff. We've got two teams that have wild card riders. Both Suzuki and Kawasaki had wild card riders, or have wild card riders, entered into the race. That's kind of great. Kawasaki has, alongside Randy DePunier and Anthony West, Akira Yanagawa. He's riding motorcycle number 87, and he's been in MotoGP a couple of times before. Let's see. He'd be joining the Kawasaki team for a one-race ride on the Ninja, currently leading the All-Japan Superbike Championship on a ZX-10R. The 36-year-old Yanagawa will be aiming to exorcise his Motegi demons. He crashed out and broke his pelvis on lap 6 of the Pacific Grand Prix in 2002, riding the 990cc ZX-RR on its debut MotoGP outing. So he's going to see Kawasaki's MotoGP history at Motegi is not that great. You know, the two factory riders and a wild card entry taking part last year, none finished, but Shinya Nakano secured his third position in 2004, which was the team's first podium spot since they returned to MotoGP. So, yeah, you know, you never know how things are going to go there, and it's actually, I think that's more of a testament to Shinya Nakano's talents and his familiarity with Motegi than it is about Kawasaki, but that's neither here nor there. Then, let's see, Rizla Suzuki is going to be running another wild card rider, so they're going to have Kosuke Akiyoshi, and I'm sure I pronounced that very, very wrong, but giving it a shot. So, Kosuke Akiyoshi, and he has also ridden in MotoGP a few times. He's making his third Grand Prix start this coming weekend. He's eager to continue with the excellent form that he showed at last season's Japanese Grand Prix. He qualified in 12th position last year and finished in 13th in front of many more experienced riders, whilst giving a very impressive debut performance. So we're looking forward to that. That's kind of cool. That rounds our grid out to 21 altogether. 7 complete rows of MotoGP riders here in Japan. That's good stuff. The other substitution or what have you that we have to cover is, like we said in our call with Jules, Alex Hoffman not riding for Pramac Dantine. Jazz Davis was kind of slated to get that ride. Apparently Dantine wanted him. He had done some testing for Ducati last week and unfortunately injured his elbow and is just not recovered enough for him to be able to race. So he had to turn down the ride. Apparently it was his decision. So Dantine is bringing in Shinichi Ito, familiar name for longtime MotoGP fans. Shinichi Ito will be racing on the second Pramac Dantine, and so that's kind of cool. This is, like I said, we covered this with Jules, but it's, you know, still very interesting stuff. What happened so far today in free practice, Friday free practice there in Japan, Danny Pedrosa topped the timesheets in both the first and second free practice sessions, so he's pretty much on a tear for Friday. Casey Stoner had the second fastest time in the first session, but couldn't quite make that last. He only came in fifth fastest in the second session. Other top names that we had in the two sessions, let's see, Marco Melandri was third in both sessions. Randy DePunier was up there. He was fourth in the first session and second in the second session, so that's good news. John Hopkins doing real well. He had a 6 and a 4th. Let's see, Nicky Hayden had 7th in the first session, but he was always down in 9th in the second session. Tony Elias, an 8th spot in the first session, and, 15th in the second session. Not looking too good there. Let's see, round out the top 10 here real quick. Carlos Checa in the first session was number 9th on the Honda LCR. And in the second session, let's see, where was old Carlos? He was down in 13th. And then a 10th spot, Shinya Nakano on the Konica Minolta Honda. And he managed to pull off a 12th in the second session. So, unfortunately, Colin Edwards, a little farther down the grid, 13th in the first session, 11th in the second session. Loris Caparossi, a little down there, he was 14th and 7th. He managed to get up to 7th for second session. And the wild cards, let's see, Yanagawa was 19th in the first session. Shin Ito was 21st in the first session. And where's Akiyoshi? Oh, he pulled off an 11th in the first session. So he's doing great up there on the thing. Way ahead of Christopher Mullen, who was only in 17th. Let's see what the gap is there. Akiyoshi pulled off a 149.127 in the first session, and Vermeulen had a 150.210, so he's a full second faster than Vermeulen in that first session. And how did he do in the second session? We had, let's see, Akiyoshi got a 6th with a 148.457. whereas which is only a shade behind John Hopkins, who had a 148.361, and quite a bit ahead of Vermeulen on a 149.555. So it looks like Vermeulen may not be quite as comfortable with Motegi as Akiyoshi is, at least judging from our Friday free practice. Of course, race day is going to be a totally different story. This is Friday free practice. It's relatively meaningless in the grand scheme of things, but it is kind of fun to talk about. So like I said, first session there, Yanagawa was down in 19th. Ito was 21st. They managed to pull their times about, you know, they pulled their times up a little bit, but not by a whole lot. In the second session, Yanagawa was 19th fastest and Ito was 20th fastest. So there we go. We've got a good race coming up here at Motegi. Of course, we will talk about the results of that race next week. But in order to talk about the results, you have to actually watch the race. And that's where things get a little complicated. On these flyaway races to Japan and Australia and whatnot, you're so many time zones away that it just wreaks havoc. So if you're going to watch the race live, if you want to actually see it live, either on MotoGP.com or if you happen to live in an area where they broadcast the races live on television, Eurosport or what have you, the times that that race is going to happen is at 2 p.m. or 1400, depending upon how you think of things, on Sunday in Japan. Now, Japan is, I can't remember what their time zone offset is, but it's huge. So they're way out there. So basically, 2 p.m. on Sunday in Japan equals 6 a.m. Sunday morning in London, or 7 a.m. in most of the rest of Europe, like say Spain or something like that, Central European daylight time. I believe you guys are still on daylight time. If you have changed to winter's time or whatever you call it over there, you might want to double check all these times. I'm not 100% sure on that. It's just a little too confusing, all these different time zones all over the world, right? But all that translates for us in America. If you're watching the race live, it's going to be on 10 p.m. Saturday night. So that's 2200 if you happen to think in 24 hour speak, Saturday night. So actually, and that's Pacific. Of course, for Eastern folks, it's going to be 1 a.m. Sunday morning. But it's a little bit more of a reasonable time than the normal 5 a.m. that we get it here on the Pacific coast, which is how the Londoners get to sample our live races and have it on our schedule for a change. So 10 p.m. Saturday night, why don't you join us in the chat room at MotoGPOD.com, or there's also a link to it from RideOn2.com. It's a live chat room. It's the same chat room. There's quite a few people that kind of come in there, and we just sort of chit-chatting away, talking about, you know, basically, wow, did you see that? That kind of thing. It's fun. It's kind of cool. I encourage you to drop by there on the website. If you want to wait to watch the TV broadcast on Speed, if you're here in the U.S. and you want to see that on Speed TV, they're showing it on Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, which is 6 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, obviously that's on a delay, and it'll have the commercials and all that good stuff. So if you have access to MotoGP.com, I encourage you, come on and watch it live 10 p.m. Saturday night, or 1 a.m. if you happen to live on the East Coast on Sunday morning. We're going to be watching the Grand Prix of Japan. Go ahead and check the website at MotoGP.com for the times of the support classes and all that sort of stuff if you're going to watch all of that. This is just the MotoGP that we covered here. So I think that about does it for everything. Again, like I said, let me know what you think of the audio quality of the show. If it's good, better, you know, if it's better than it was or worse than it was, if I should go to the way I was doing it or what have you. Things are a little bit different. Like I said, it's trying some new things out. It's always good. But I do like some feedback about it. So Bob at MotoGPOD.com. And until then, enjoy the races at Motegi, and I will see you or chat with you in the chat room at MotoGPOD.com on race day. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.